Hi, I'm Mike Webb, and welcome to the ProPublica podcast. This week, we're going to take a look at dark money groups. They're called dark money because little is known about their funding. Since they don't have to disclose who their donors are, one of the few ways to find out how they operate is through the information they file with the IRS and the Federal Election Commission. And ProPublica's Kim Barker did just that. She reviewed thousands of pages of filings, tracked their spending, attended a variety of political events, watched hours of ads, and interviewed dozens of political strategists and campaign finance experts. And she's joining us here in the Storage Closet studio to tell us what she found. Welcome to the podcast, Kim.
Thanks very much for having me, Mike.
What are 501c4s and why should people care about them?
501c4s are also known as social welfare organizations. And these are different than, say, charities. Charities are called 501c3s. 501c5s are unions. 501c6s are trade associations like the Chamber of Commerce. Now, social welfare nonprofits, or 501c4s, have been around for almost 100 years. The tax statute that created them was actually the Revenue Act back in 1913. And they've sort of morphed over the years from being groups that were strictly seen to be good, sort of like it was a catch-all. They're good, but not good enough to be a charity, right? Because donations to these groups were not tax deductible. So, you know, you had groups such as the NAACP was an early 501c4. In the 30s, you had groups that were like, you know, the federal cafeteria that served lunches and dinners to federal employees. That was a 501c4. The Blue Cross and Blue Shield groups until the 80s were actually 501c4s.
Well, when did the distinction change and they became more political?
Well, in the 60s, you know, I've obviously spent way too much time on this subject because I could actually spend hours talking about every single decade. But in the 1960s, it started becoming more lobbying. And they've always been allowed to do some lobbying, but you had the Sierra Club that switched from being a C3 to a C4 because it was doing so much lobbying. And then really, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, they started being able to do and doing more of these kind of issue ads, these electioneering communications. They were later dubbed electioneering communications. But these are the sort of ads that you see that are supposed to be about an issue and might mention a candidate or mention, you know, how they feel like a particular lawmaker should vote on something. So, you know, they say things like, you know, so-and-so is bad for the environment. So-and-so did this bad for the environment. Call so-and-so. Tell them to stop being so bad for the environment. We've all heard those ads, right?
Right.
So over the years, they did these. They were allowed to do a certain amount of these. The IRS always had wiggle room when it came to 501c4s. The statute says, for instance, that a 501c4 should be exclusively organized for the benefit of social welfare. Everybody's pretty clear what exclusively means, right?
Right.
I mean, we all think we know.
We
can look.
Only.
You can look it up in the dictionary. It's pretty clear what exclusively means. But then there was an IRS regulation that came along afterwards that defined exclusively as primarily. So it means that it says specifically it means they're organized exclusively for social welfare if they're primarily engaged in social welfare activities. I keep trying to get somebody to explain to me how exactly primarily became the definition for exclusively, but it happened not just for C4s, but for C3s as well over the years. So then, wow, that opened up this gray area, right? So you had this situation where, well, how much politics is okay? You know?
Right.
And so groups somewhere along...
They just ran with it.
They ran with it. And it's not like this is a brand new thing, but it's been, you know, it's one of these outside spending groups where, you know, I always refer to it as it's a bit like whack-a-mole with campaign finance where, you know, the regulators will try to come along and stop this and then it pops out someplace else. And C4s would pop out somewhat during the 90s and then they went back down. And then in 2004, you had, you know, 527s come up shortly after the McCain-Feingold law, and then they went back down. And so then in 2008, you really started seeing more activity from C4s, more electioneering communications being run by them, which are the ads that run between 30 and 60 days ahead of an election. But then you had Citizens United in January of 2010, which really sort of moved the ball.
That changed everything.
It changed everything. And everybody's been focusing a lot on super PACs, the whole idea that, you know, you've got these organizations that Citizens United paved the way for that could raise and spend unlimited amounts of money on specific, you know, electing certain people as long as they didn't coordinate with those particular people.
Well, let me stop you there. What is the difference between a super PAC and a 501c4?
Super PACs can just do politics. You know, they're allowed to do politics and politics only, meaning they can, you know, spend money on campaigns as they like, as long as they do not coordinate with a specific candidate. But they've got to disclose their donors. And 501c4s don't.
And why don't 501c4s have to disclose?
Wouldn't couple that be of reasons.
Tax filings.
Couple of reasons they don't have to disclose. And this is where it gets really, I mean, I realize the whole topic is complicated, but this is a particular complication. They don't have to disclose their donors to the IRS or to the public at large because neither do charities, really. I mean, for instance, we're a charity, right? ProPublica is.
Sure.
We disclose our donors in the interest of transparency, and there are a lot of charities that do that. But you're not required to disclose your donors.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And C4s are not required to disclose their donors, and I've never seen one that voluntarily does. This goes back to a 1958 Supreme Court decision, which was NAACP versus Alabama, where Alabama was trying to find out who were those pesky people supporting the NAACP. The troublemakers. And the Supreme Court actually came down and said, you know, there's no way we're going to require this particular group to give over their donors because that could lead to retaliation to folks who are supporting controversial causes. And 501c4s believe very strongly in this. You know, you've got ACLU feels very strongly about this. And there's plenty of 501c4s that have been around for decades that feel very strongly about the idea that they do not want to disclose their donors overall.
Well, that's something I talked to a friend about. He felt that it wasn't anyone's business how much money someone's donating or how
different.
Those groups spend.
Different. That's totally different. We've got to go back to the whole idea of why then we understand why these groups don't have to disclose to the IRS. We understand why you don't have to list all your donors. But what about the money you spend on political ads? Mm-hmm. Should you have to disclose the donors for those particular ads? And that's the difference. The ads versus telling all your donors, right?
Right.
And the reason you don't have to disclose to the FEC your particular donors for ads is because these groups have been able to define themselves as not primarily a political committee. And this goes to the whole idea of main purpose.
Right.
So you've got your different thing with the FEC and your different thing with the IRS, and there's all these loopholes that these groups have been able to figure out their way through.
Right.
So they don't have to disclose their donors to the FEC. Although this year, for the first time in years, the groups are supposed to disclose their donors, their major donors, for electioneering communication ads, which are the vaguer issue ads. You know, these are the ones, again, that say things like, call so-and-so, tell them to stop killing jobs. You see a lot of these. They're supposed to disclose their donors for these this year, but they still don't have to disclose their donors for the more direct independent expenditures.
Well, that gets into the semantics problem. What actually is electioneering? What is what is political activity? What is working for the general welfare?
Sure, sure. You know, the IRS defines political activity in a very vague way, right? They say, name all the amount of money that you've spent on indirect or direct campaign intervention, you know?
Campaign intervention.
Well, the whole idea of, like, did you spend money indirectly or directly to help elect a candidate to office, whether federal, state, or local, or even in a political party? They're pretty specific about what they're looking at. But they say directly or indirectly. They don't define a political ad, though, the same way that the FEC does. They did use more of a, you know, you can call it the quack test or whatever you want to call it. If it walks like a political ad, if it talks like a political ad.
It's a political ad.
Exactly. As opposed to being like, oh, you know, it's an electioneering communication. It doesn't use magic words. It only runs 30 days before or 60 days before an election. The IRS is much more like, you know what? We're going to look at all of your ads and we're going to take them on a case by case basis. And we're going to look at when they ran, and we're going to look at your overall purpose, and we're going to look at your other spending, and we're going to determine, are you primarily political or not?
Okay, so what does the IRS do when they find that someone said that they weren't going to do any political activity, and then they file with the FEC that they spent
absolutely nothing, apparently? I mean, I'm not really sure. That was one of the most surprising findings that that I think we came up with taking a look at the documents and comparing really what they say in their tax returns versus what they tell the FEC. Is we found, you know, at least I believe it was 32 groups or 30 groups, actually, that told the IRS one thing and they told the FEC something else. And then we found a number of groups that told the FEC they spent less money, or they told the IRS they spent less money on politics than they told the FEC. And it was almost as if nobody was taking a look at the two documents and comparing them with each other.
I mean, shouldn't there at the very least, shouldn't they lose their tax exemption, or is that what the law actually calls for?
I mean, should they lose their tax exemption? It's difficult for me as a reporter to say that. I know that what can happen, at least this is the theory of what could happen, is that the IRS could come in and look at these groups and say, you know what, you're not a 501c4. You're not acting like a 501c4. You're out there, you know, primarily benefiting a group of politicians or a specific political party, and you're actually acting like a 527, which is a political committee. And therefore, you owe back taxes. And they could even fine them if they were doing something particularly egregious. But at the very least, they could say, you know, all the money that you claimed was tax exempt over the years, you actually owe taxes on.
Well, when you spoke to people at the IRS, what did they say? Are they frustrated that they can't take more action?
I wish I could speak to people at the IRS. Consider this a call out to, like, you know, have the IRS folks call me and talk to me even on background.
They didn't respond or explain why?
No. And I mean, the IRS has got rules. Like, they're not going to talk about specific taxpayers. They don't want to get into specifics. Any investigation is behind the scenes. And we all know the rules of the IRS. I sent them specific questions. I was in touch with them for quite a while. They knew I was working on this story. I requested most of the documents from the IRS. They were very responsive to our public records requests, and they've continued to be responsive, but they've just not commented. So they won't even talk on off the record. Not that I could talk about them talking off the record, but they don't talk about it.
What about the FEC?
The FEC has got similar issues.
But can't they define what political activity is, or can't they take some kind of punitive action?
Well, you know, I don't know if the FEC doesn't necessarily pay attention to what the IRS is doing, and the IRS doesn't necessarily pay attention to what the FEC is doing. So for the FEC, do they care if it's a social welfare nonprofit? Do they care if it's a union? Do they care if it's a corporation? Do they care if it's a super PAC?
They just want to know that political activity is happening.
They want you to report your ads within 24 to 48 hours of when they run if you're an outside group. And they want you to disclose your donors. And they also understand that in many cases, these groups can figure out ways not to disclose their donors or to disclose, like, shell donors, you know?
Okay. So the gist of your story is about how they sort of get around the laws. And you wrote about some nonprofits and how they give grants and funnel money to other groups. Explain how that happens.
Well, some groups they're social welfare nonprofits, and they give almost all their money away to other groups, which then go and spend that money or other money on politics. And it seems like it's a way for groups to do two things with these grants. Number one, they can count giving these grants away as part of their social welfare mission. You know, hey, if I'm a C4 and I'm giving money to another C4, I'm helping their social welfare purpose. I'm helping the social welfare purpose of the planet. So therefore, that's social welfare, and they're allowed to do that. And then the other reason that we found out that groups might be giving these grants is to further obscure where the money is actually coming from. So therefore, say now, this year, when you're supposed to disclose your donor for an electioneering communication, and I'm a group, let's say, called, you know, I'll use an example from 2010 that happened, the Independent Women's Voice, and I'm running an ad, and I'm going to tell you who gave money to me for this ad. So I name another group that's called the Annual Fund. And that's all I have to say. And you're looking at this and you're saying, the annual fund, that sounds so benign.
Right.
What is the annual fund? And, you know, just try Googling the annual fund. You're going to come up with a lot of annual funds. But it turns out this particular organization had been incorporated a couple weeks before out of, you know, Delaware. And it was, you know, run by a guy who was very involved with these C4s. And the annual fund actually, through their tax return, you could find out that they ended up getting most of their money from another C4 called the Wellspring Committee that was run by the guy's wife.
So it just becomes a shell game.
It becomes a shell game. It's a, you know, we refer to it as a, you know, like these Russian nesting dolls,
right,
where you can just sort of pull one apart and you get another one inside and then another one inside.
Okay. How much money are we talking about in this election cycle?
Well, it's not clear how much is going to be spent this year. I mean, we all know that it's going to be the most expensive presidential election in the history of the world. In 2010, I can say that these groups spent somewhere around $100 million, which was significantly more than the super PACs did. Right. And I would imagine that it's going to be the same this year around. There are just certain people who feel more and certain corporations that feel more comfortable donating anonymously than they do donating with their names out there. So far, we got some numbers from a group called the Campaign Media Analysis Group, which is a division of Kantar Media. And they actually pay attention and estimate the amount of money that's spent on TV ads outside of the reporting period to the FEC. So you really get a sense of how much money is being spent, you know, before we enter the last 2 months. And they told us that and estimated for us that there had been about $71 million that had been spent by these 501c4 groups as of August 8th on TV ads mentioning the president, versus about $56 million that had been spent by super PACs. And this is outside money. And I mean, these are numbers that I think most people hear, myself included, and you just sort of glaze over millions of dollars. It's almost incomprehensible. But I keep coming back to the idea that, are we okay as a democracy with having all this anonymous money coming in? And it seems like if we are, great, let's talk about it. Are we okay with anonymous donations? I mean, if you look at Citizens United, the one thing that the Supreme Court says in this, in letting, you know, in opening the floodgates to super PACs, basically, and to unlimited amounts of money coming in, is that transparency will handle this. The whole idea that
that's the idea.
Well, that's not what's happened.
The reality is different.
That is not what's happened.
Right. Is one party benefiting more? Are Democrats getting the best of this? Are Republicans getting the best?
You know, and I want to be clear about this because it goes back and forth every single election as to who's doing what and who's more nefarious with trying to do, you know, get around the rules that exist and trying to avoid naming their donors. But most definitely in 2010, the Republicans spent more money through these groups. And most definitely this year so far, they're spending more money.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that the Democrats aren't going to try to catch up. But it's always different when you're an incumbent versus when you're trying to, you know, get in.
Right. And like you said, it's whack-a-mole. So now that they see that that's an opening,
yeah,
I'm sure they'll start to be a little more aggressive.
Well, who knows? I mean, they've been trying to raise money, these groups like Priorities USA. But I always come back to like the idea that, hey, you give $2.5 million to Americans for Prosperity and you're a businessman, you might get in the room with the Koch brothers. There's incentive there.
Yeah.
There's incentive to give $2.5 million to Crossroads GPS. You get in the room with Karl Rove. He's important.
Sure.
You give $2.5 million to Priorities USA, and no offense to Bill Burton and Sean Sweeney, but nobody knows who they are. There are a couple of former aides of Barack Obama, but you don't really, I think that a businessman who's trying to do business here, and let's face it, that is the ultimate thing that's going to come out of these groups. And that's why it seems so important that we at least have the discussion about whether this money should be identified, because you're telling me that all this money is coming into these groups, and some groups could be giving $10 million, and it's not going to make a difference after somebody's elected.
Kim, I think you answered my last question, which was, why is this a ProPublica story?
Yes, I think I did.
That is why.
Exactly. Right. I mean, because let's come down to it. You know, Who's not going to know where this money is coming from? The groups obviously are going to know where this money is coming from.
Sure.
And the people who were elected are going to know where this money is coming from. It's you and me who aren't going to know where this money is coming from. And I want to know. I want to know when a government contract comes up and there's different folks that are bidding for it. I want to know how much money that particular company is given. I just do. Call me crazy.
I don't want to stop you, Kim, but unfortunately I have to.
Okay.
Hey, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was Kim Barker, and you can read her investigation at propublica.org/darkmoney. And while you're there, be sure to look at the terrific news application designed by Al Shaw that is a database of these nonprofit groups, and it lets you look at their tax filings, the ads they've produced, their reported spending, and more. And now for our official Say the Darndest Things Tumblr quote of the week. We don't make our donors' names available. We can take corporate money, personal money, cash, shekels, whatever you got. Who said it? Matt Brooks, the head of the Republican Jewish Coalition, had a fundraiser in New York earlier this year. The coalition won tax-exempt status in 1985, telling the IRS it would not spend money on elections. That's it for this week's show. You can catch this podcast on Stitcher. And as always, thanks to Minhee Cho for producing and to you for listening. For ProPublica, I'm Mike Webb. We'll catch you next time.